Expressing your love can look many different ways, and with the right jewelry gift from Blue Nile, it can truly sparkle. Blue Nile's collection of classic diamond jewelry makes for the kind of gift that speaks volumes without saying a single word. Or switch things up with a sapphire piece sure to spark conversation. Either way, Blue Nile's diamond guarantee ensures you get the highest quality at the best price. Express yourself with Blue Nile, the original online jeweler, at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Today, I'm delighted to be joined by a very surprising guest, one that's had a goalkeeping career that has spanned into the media and TV world. I'm absolutely buzzing to have him on. We've got Scott van der Sluis from Love Island.
People are asking me what I do, and I actually don't know. Like, I'm not retired from football, but I'm not playing at the moment, so it's a bit of a weird one. I was a little bit of a weird. I was a kid, I just like diving about and getting muddy and stuff. Follow Wrexham. Yeah. They're like my second team now.
Everyone says that, yeah.
Exactly. But I'm actually from North Wales.
So you can claim that properly.
I'm not from like Leeds or something who's just seen the documentary. And that was my downfall in the end. I got into having too much of a life outside of football, and I'd gone in without really training or anything, and I think I was sick in the first session. And then I got a text. It was like, so-and-so from ITV, we just want to have a chat about your Love Island application. I'm going to tell you the maddest thing now. You probably will never experience this throughout being a goalkeeper coach again. He said to me, he was like, you're not going on Love Island, are you? You're not going to believe it, I am.
What a save from Mark Howard.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to the Yours, Mine, Away podcast. Thank you for tuning in. Make sure you are subscribed and give us a little like as well. It does help. Today, I'm delighted to be joined by a very surprising guest, one that's had a goalkeeping career that has spanned into the media and TV world, that one that you probably don't know as much detail in. I didn't know as much detail in, but I'm absolutely buzzing to have him on. We've got Scott van der Sluis from Love Island. Welcome, mate.
How are you, mate? You good?
I'm very good. Thank you for coming in.
No worries.
It's a weirdest link up, but obviously you used to be a goalkeeper, or you still are a goalkeeper.
Yeah, it's a weird one now, because I'm like, people are asking me what I do, and I actually don't know. Like, I've not retired from football, but I'm not playing at the moment, so it's a bit of a weird one. Yeah. But yeah, I did grow up being a goalkeeper up until the last year.
Until
or so,
the
yeah.
last year until, that's yeah, been an absolute whirlwind.
So, yeah, it's been all over the place, yeah.
Yeah, last year was pretty crazy for you, weren't it?
Just a little bit, yeah. It was a step into a different world.
So you was playing football up until like May last year?
Yeah, so I was playing for Shelburne in the League of Ireland up until May. And then I was in the Love Island Villa about 2 weeks later.
That's crazy, that. I can't wait to actually hear the details of it and that. Yeah, but like I said, not a lot of people on my audience will know that you used to be a goalkeeper, and probably your audience wouldn't know the details of your mentality of being a goalie and what you had to sacrifice and stuff like that. So I can't wait to delve into all of that. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to kick off with some quick fire questions first. Loosen you up a little bit. Right, catch or parry?
Catch every day, yeah.
See, what I love is like your love of Ireland, like people that like follow you, they will not have a clue why
they
you're
won't
saying
have a clue
that.
What's going
That's
on
why
here.
I'm buzzing
yeah.
off
yeah.
this. Right, favourite goalie kit colour?
All black.
Nice, don't mind that. Are you a play out from the back or kick it long type?
Play out from the back.
Yeah, total football, yeah.
Total football, yeah.
Yeah, you come through a decent little academy as well. So, your favourite ever goalkeeper?
I loved Casillas growing up, now I think Alisson. I think Alisson's a different level.
Yeah, you're a Liverpool fan as well.
Yeah, I'm a Liverpool fan.
Yeah,
so
a bit biased.
A little bit biased, but...
You're a long sleeve shirt or short sleeve shirt?
Long sleeve.
Yeah, old school goalie, I like this. Black kit, long sleeve. Yeah. Don't mind that. Right, who do you think is the best in the world now?
Alisson,
hands down.
I think so. With my football opinions, I try and sort of strip it back as much as possible, but Alisson can just do everything.
He's got everything, every tool. He's a beast as well.
Yeah, and you're looking at some of the shots that, again, other keepers parry. He's catching everything. It makes everything look so simple.
Yeah, that's a sign of a good goalie, mate.
Yeah.
Right, last quickfire one, right? It's the last minute of the game. You can either score a goal or save a penalty.
Score a goal.
Yeah, it has to be. Thank you. I'm on that page. Yeah, it has to be. You've got to score
just,
a goal.
Yeah, it's just...
We've all dreamt about it.
Yeah.
Right, obviously, I want to give a little shout-out to your brother as well. Must be a bit of an inspiration to you. Wrexham as well.
Yeah, so, yeah, my brother came up the system in America. My brother came up the system in Wrexham. I think it was about 2006, 2007 he was there, but I must have been about 6 or 7. He used to basically... played football in the back garden with him, and he just stuck me in goal, and it was either go into the net with the ball or try and start saving it. Yeah. So that's how I became a goalkeeper. Yeah.
Yeah. I was going to ask that. Obviously, most people's backstories, but why goalkeeping? So just because your brother took me in the garden?
It was that, and I was a little bit of a weirdo as a kid. I just like diving about and getting muddy and stuff. So and then I've not really got a story where I'm like, I was an outfielder and then suddenly I changed to a goalkeeper. I've just always been a keeper.
Yeah, yeah. But you must have, obviously, to interact with your brother, he's what, 8, 9 years older than you?
Oh, no, he's 13 years older than me.
13 years.
Yeah, so he's 36
but
now.
But like for you to try and be with him and be cool with him, going in goal and playing football is your best way of like...
Yeah, that was literally what happened. I was going around playing Power Rangers and I didn't like football at all.
Yeah.
And then, suddenly I was like, I went to some of the games. I was like, that's actually quite cool playing football. So, I ended up... in the back garden, saving shots for him. So.
Yeah, yeah. And obviously, grew up in Connorskey, now in Wigan and that.
Yeah.
There's a funny little Welsh connection. Obviously, I'm at Wrexham now. Yeah. So it's quite a nice little story, obviously, Connorskey on the border and that.
Yeah, yeah. Well, obviously, not many people knew that I was from North Wales with the accent. It's a very English sort of Chester-sounding accent. I feel like because I'm from so close to the border and I have to put up with the stuff from the English all the time, I'm more of a proud Welshman.
Yeah, yeah.
I follow Wrexham. They're like my second team now.
Yeah,
I get down to the racecourse.
Everyone says that.
But I'm actually from North Wales.
You can claim that properly.
I'm not from like Leeds or something. Who's just seen the documentary?
Yeah. So obviously, going from playing football in the back garden with your brother, what made you then go? I tell you what, I want to get in a team. I want to find a team for me.
So he was a manager of my local side in Connorskey or Shotton, just the next sort of town over. Team called Aston Park Rangers, and I basically went in goal there, and I was just really good in goal. When I was 7 now.
Your brother had prepared you
He's prepared me, yeah. So he was the manager of that local side, and he got like a scout from Wrexham to come up and watch me. So I ended up going to train with Wrexham, and then you know how it is in the pre-academy, the scouts who are working with all different clubs. So ended up training with Wrexham, Everton, Liverpool, United.
Doing the rounds, yeah.
Doing the rounds, yeah. You know how it is with the younger keepers now. So yeah, yeah. That's how it all started, yeah. Just from a local team in North Wales.
And did you end up joining any of those? I know you went to Man United at 8 years old, but did you have like a Sunday league team that you was part of? Or?
Well, that was so the local team was Aston Park Rangers.
Right, okay.
Yeah, they're just honestly a local side. I don't even know if they exist anymore, to be honest. But yeah, so that's it. That was my local side. And then obviously at 8, I signed for Man United then.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
That's when you couldn't really play with your local side anymore.
Things started to get a bit more real in the football world.
Definitely, yeah.
Yeah, and obviously you was there for a year, but big Liverpool fan.
Yeah.
Liverpool then came knocking.
Yeah, so there was, do you know Mark Morris?
Yes.
So 23, he's coach at Liverpool now. So he sort of trained me when I was younger. I used to go for extra sessions. And he'd just gone to Liverpool. So he was in contact with my mum and dad. And he sort of spoke to my mum and dad and brought me over. And as soon as I heard Liverpool, I just wanted to be there. Like
Fully committed.
I was like, yeah, that's just where I wanted to be.
Yeah. And obviously doing your pre-academy stuff there, it's an unbelievable place to learn. Did you always think, right, this is the job, this is what I want to do when I'm older? Or was there... It's not easy, is it? Like, obviously the numbers and stuff like that of how many people are there. Like, turning up at Liverpool each week compared to Sunday League, so different.
Oh, completely different. But because I'd been in it from such a young age, it just become second nature. And I just become a little bit complacent. I got asked sometimes, what if football doesn't work out? And in my head, that just wasn't a possibility. Like, it was always just going to work out football. And you hear the numbers, people come in and say, listen... You have little talks, people coming into the academy and they're like, listen, this is the amount of players that make it, and you always think you're going to be that one.
I was like that.
Yeah, and I feel like, especially in the academy these days, or you only really hear the stories of the people who did make it. You don't really hear the stories of the people who just sort of fell out the game.
So true, yeah.
I'm a little bit lucky now in terms of I have some sort of platform to talk about someone who didn't make it in the game. I didn't make it to where I wanted to go. And I've took a different route, but there's many people who just had to get a normal job. And
yep. It's normally they will say an injury or one manager. It's not easy out there, especially for like the young audience that we do have. It's not easy. You have to knuckle down. It's hard work and you're going to have a lot of rejections. But these rejections, you need to make you stronger and strive for that next opportunity.
Yeah, no, definitely. You have to learn from a young age. Like I was... When I was at Liverpool, so I went to Rainhill High School, which is where they bring the young lads for like obviously their schooling, so they're all in one place. So I had to move away from home during the week from the age of about 11.
Yep.
And I look at it now, I've got an 11-year-old nephew, and I'm like, I could not imagine him moving away during the week and going to a sort of full-time football environment if you are living away.
Some sacrifice at that age.
It's ridiculous, but I didn't think anything of it at the time. But yeah, it's crazy, and you expect it to be mature from that age.
Yep, yeah, almost. You're not fending for yourself. You are looked after by a host family.
Yeah,
it's not home.
No, it's not home. No, and I got on with my host family. I loved them, but yeah, still not the same as coming back to your mum and dad.
Yeah, I suppose that makes you grow up quicker, but that's not always a great thing. But in terms of the football world, it does help because your maturity goes up, your understanding of the game because you're more exposure, that also grows.
Yeah, no, it definitely did. I definitely did have to grow up quicker, but...
Especially in Liverpool.
at Liverpool, yeah, it was quite strict, to be honest. I look back now and I sort of blamed everyone else, like, oh, I did this, because there was a lot of off-the-field issues when I was at Liverpool. I did... Stupid stuff. Our age group was a little bit crazy. Not going to lie to anyone, yeah. It was, we all just said some crazy stuff, did some crazy stuff. So it probably wasn't the best environment for a lad from North Wales who's from such like a local town to go into all these streetwise kids who know what they're doing and get away with everything. And I felt like sometimes I was the one holding the smoking gun.
And
I tried to blame everyone else for that. But now I look back and I'm like, yeah, I did make my mistakes. It come back to bite me on the arse, definitely.
Yeah. Oh. But then obviously from there, then you then went to Swansea.
Yeah.
Moved away from home
full
properly.
Time, yeah, full time, yeah.
Yeah, again, another huge step, but also a great step for your career, because it's one to go. I think you did YTS there and stuff like that. And like, obviously, you know that like this is the best opportunity for me at a club that was at that time really on the forefront, weren't they? Yeah, really good. So that must have been an incredible opportunity for you.
Yeah, no, it was. Yeah, again, the first time I moved away from home full time, the coaches were good to me. And I knew a few of the players from being in the Wales setup from before it. So I felt like that was the easiest transition to go in, to moving away away from home full time. But yeah, you could see Swansea had just gained the Category 1 status. You had some good coaches. I had Andrew Sparks was my goalkeeper coach there. And you could see how much...
Sparks has been on the show.
Oh, has he? Yeah. I didn't know that. But yeah, you could see how much, how in-depth he went into his... like his goalkeeping, his planning for sessions, and you sort of take that for granted at times. But I suppose like
it's naive
when you go away, not everyone is like that. To be fair, and sometimes I felt like at the time he was hard on me at times. But again, that would have only been for the better.
Yeah.
But he left when I was going into my second year of my scholarship then, and yeah, maybe if he was there an extra year, maybe he would have been a little bit harder on me. I wouldn't have sort of strayed away from football activities, and yeah, he was definitely a good coach anyway.
Yeah, and Swansea as a club, obviously, like I said, especially at that time, was on the rise, and obviously with Brendan taking them and Martinez taking them to the Prem, and like it was obviously, I've been there on loan for a month. It's a great club.
Yeah,
but you're quite removed from everything in Swansea, aren't you? As a location.
Yeah, but the maddest thing is where my town is. Swansea's probably more in. There's more going on in Swansea than my local town, so it was a bigger city to me. And that was my downfall in the end. I got into having too much of a life outside of football in Swansea, where I then started to focus on non-football.
Wine Street,
yeah, basically, yeah. there was a story with Sparksy where I was 17 at the time, and I'd gone into Wine Street, and I think it was the day before a game. This is how I got into the non-football sort of related matters, and I was out with my mates there, and walked into a club. I'm sat in the corner, and I've seen Sparksy walk in. I'm trying to keep my head down like that, and he walks behind me, and then he just comes up and taps me on the shoulder. I thought, oh, no, I couldn't.
17 years old, not meant to be in here.
Couldn't have fucked this up anymore.
Yeah. Did he pull you straight away?
He pulled me straight away, yeah, and then he had a word the next day.
So you just went next door instead?
No, I did go home then. But I used to sneak out the window of like my host family. Yeah. So they never even knew I was gone sometimes. Like they didn't even have a clue I was in town that night. I come away from that night. I went in to play the game the next day. I can't remember. I think I did all right in the game, to be honest. That's how it always is, isn't it?
I don't know.
Yeah. Then on the Monday, he come up to me and he went, listen, we're not going to sort of tell anyone about this. And then went upstairs then, and suddenly the head of academy calls me in. I'm like, Tabaxi basically said to me, like, we're going to brush this under the carpet, but only because you were drinking water at the time. And I actually was, but that was because I drank too much. A glass of water. he went up and said the head of academy. I think he said it to the head of academy. He said he didn't, but... was what it was, and I went up and he sort of suspended me for 3 weeks then at the academy, which is what's going to happen. But yeah, that's so basically Swansea. Anyway, all back to the original point. Swansea as a city drew me in too much, and I made too many friends there, and I was too focused on sort of the life outside of football.
But that's not easy at that age, at 16, 17, 18, to like move away from home, lose all your own family and friends, and then if you get in with the wrong crowd, and there ain't a lot to do when you're in digs and stuff, is there?
No.
Like, it's either sit at home, play PlayStation, or go out. I'm not being funny. You can only go to cinema a certain amount of times a week, especially at 17. And the first thing you're going to do is go and find out where the girls are, or like where the pubs are. That's what you're going to do naturally at that age. So it's never going to be easy. After Swansea, though, did you find football changed for you? Because obviously, once you have a couple of setbacks and that, to then go and put yourself out there as your own person and not have the big backing of a club to try and send you out on loan, it changes the perspective, doesn't it?
Yeah, no, definitely. So just before I left Swansea, I went on loan to Merthyr Town in the Southern Prem. So that was my first experience of men's football, and I was like, oh, this is serious now. Like, players aren't just going to beat around you on corners. You're going to get flattened. Like,
yeah.
But I loved it down at Merthyr, to be fair.
Yeah.
Then, yeah, obviously, I never got my pro at Swansea, and I went on trial at West Ham then. But it was, yeah, in the off-season, I'd not done too much work. This is what I mean by that. I was so complacent with football, where I always had in the back of my head that it was just going to happen without making it happen.
Yeah.
And I'd gone in without really training or anything, and I think I was sick in the first session. And yeah, that's what I mean. I just didn't take some of the opportunities that came about as I should have done. And I didn't, again, at the time, you don't realise it, but you look back now and you think, oh, if only I'd have done this, if only I'd have done that.
Yeah. I'm not saying that you should have called on your brother more and like relied on his experiences. You know, sometimes it's embarrassment in yourself that you don't want to pick up the phone and say, where am I going wrong? Or like, do you think you could have done that?
A little bit, but I don't think my brother ever had the experience of moving away from at such a young age, so he didn't understand that, because it was never football or my footballing ability that was a problem.
Yeah.
It was always like
distractions.
Distractions, yeah. And when he was my age at the time, he was always at home, so he always had mum and dad to sort of give him a kick up the arse to make sure he's not doing the wrong thing.
Yeah.
Whilst I didn't have that.
Yeah.
I was literally, on my own, so he wasn't making his own decisions at that age. He was, mum and dad were keeping him sort of ticking over whilst it weren't the same for me.
So when the trial at West Ham didn't go as well as planned, then what was the next steps? Northwich, Victoria, Runcorn Linnets, and
I went on trial at Salford for a bit, I've trained unbelievable. The first week I was under guy called Warren Joyce.
Yep, Warren Joyce.
Big sort of name in academy football and probably even first team football, to be fair as well. I trained unbelievably. He brought me in. I trained unbelievably, and then I went to do a game with the first team. It was like a mixed game, or was it like 23s against first team?
Did you train with Carlo Nash, the first team goalie coach?
Yes, I had a couple
he
of sessions.
The ball so hard,
oh my
mate.
God, yeah, that was a ridiculous. Yeah, and you have to catch it as well. And before the game. This is the one thing where I'm like, the maddest excuse ever. I lost my toenail before the game. I couldn't kick the ball. So every time the ball was coming back, I was trying to find a way to play out, even if it wasn't on at all. Because every time I kicked the ball, it was absolute agony. And I didn't have a great game at all.
Yeah.
And that was it. Then that was, Warren had sort of put me up to the first team manager and said, listen, this is, because they had to make all the decisions to even go into the B team.
Yep.
And he obviously see me in that game. He was like, nah. And then, end up in non-league football then.
Yep. How hard is it going into non-league football? Non-league football's tough, isn't it?
Oh, it's ridiculously tough because you then, when I went on loan to non-league from Swansea, you always have that protective parent glove. Yep. Now I was on my own. I was like, that's that gaffer there, that's my gaffer. If you don't like me, I'm out.
Yep. And the contracts aren't watertight, they're not concrete. If they don't like you, they can just bin
they're
you.
They're gone, yeah. And you've got the other scenario as well, where if they do have a keeper who is under contract, you literally, and he does end up putting you, you can't put a foot wrong, because they will do anything. The club or the people above the manager will make that player on the contract be in.
Yep.
It was definitely a learning curve for me.
Yeah.
But it did make me better as a goalkeeper.
Yeah. And then you had spells at Bangor as well.
Yeah. So I went back into sort of Welsh football. My brother had played for Bangor, and I was like, they're a big club.
Yep.
I think I was 19 at the time. And I was like, I'll go back there. And they offered really good money, which they couldn't pay in the end. I went there, played well, and then I did my MCL after about 2 weeks. So I was out for 6 months. Come back for about two games. They'd made me club captain at this point as well. Come back for about two games, and then the club was like suspended from all competitions. So it was definitely a wild.
Yeah, you've had a few difficult situations then to come through. I know I spoke to you about it off air, but COVID was another one. Like coming through any academy or trying to break into first team during that period, never going to be easy for anyone.
Yeah. Oh no, definitely. There's actually, so Bangor was after COVID, but just before COVID. I managed to get a trial at Wigan with their 23s there, and went in, did really well. And then obviously COVID hit and the financial situation at Wigan hit as well.
Yep.
Where I actually think that's the one out of all the trials I'd been on. I'd been to sort of, yeah, West Ham, Salford, been up to Accrington, but a few places. That was the one where I was like, do you know what? I probably could have got something there.
Yep.
Without COVID. But obviously it's all ifs, buts and maybes.
Just a bit of bad luck
Bad luck, yeah. So I'm like, yeah, it is what it is. You just got to move on from it.
Yeah. Obviously, representing Wales as well, you represented Wales through the youth system and that, and you actually won the Victory Shield.
Yeah.
Would you say that's the highlight so far of your career? Footballing wise, that must have been incredible.
Match-wise, yeah. In that team, there were some players who Ethan Ampadu.
Yep.
Where's he at? I think he's at Leeds now.
Leeds now, yeah.
Ben Cabango starting every week for Swansea. Yep. Rabbi Matondo, I think he's at Rangers. Yep. So there were some decent players in that age group. But yeah, that was definitely an experience because that was the year above me I was playing as well.
Right, okay.
So that was, yeah, the 2000 age group, and I'm a 2001 born. Yep. Obviously, international, it works differently than it with age groups. So yeah, I think I only played one game, which was against Ireland. But yeah, I remember how we won it. I think we went 1-0 down as well in the final game.
Yeah.
And then turned it around to win 3-1. So yeah, it was definitely a great experience.
Yeah, unreal. Obviously, representing your country at any level and at any age group is an incredible achievement. Do you look at that now and go, I wish I could taste more of that? Or like if your career did pan out slightly different? Because obviously you look at the Wales squad now and... Yeah. Like, there's never, ever been loads of strength in depth anyway, so there would have been real opportunities for you.
Yeah, possibly. Again, this is another one where off-the-pitch stuff messed it up for myself.
It's good that you're so honest about the off-the-field stuff. You're not deflecting it, you're just going...
I think at the time I never was honest. I was never honest enough, and I think that was probably frustrating for most of the coaches I worked with, and if any of them are listening to this, they'll think, oh, it's finally got through to him, but it's way too late. But now you look back and you're like, yeah... Okay, it is a very demanding thing to make someone that young who's living away from home have this much make this much sacrifice, but it's got to be done, and I only have myself to blame for that. But anyway, yeah, going back to just finished under 16 level, Wales had always loved me. Even I didn't really play that. I don't think I was ever that great at Swansea 15-16s, but I always sort of played well for Wales. And season had finished at under 16, and I remember I sat at GCSE on the 6th of June now, and come back from a GCSE, I'm on the way home, and I get a phone call from Tony Roberts, and he's like, we're doing small-sided games tomorrow. I'm 16 at the time, and we're doing small-sided games tomorrow. Will you come up and train with us?
No way, that's
incredible.
So I was
16, and I got to train, and they were my heroes as well, because the year before they just got to the Euro semi and I was a fan in a fan park watching them, and then suddenly I was training with them. So yeah, there was Danny Ward, there was Hennessy, and Owain Fon Williams as well. And yeah, we went into small-sided games and Bale wasn't there, which is the one thing I'm like, oh, if only I could have trained with Bale, but Ramsey was.
Yeah.
And we did that, and after we had dinner, we were all sat around the table, and like, they were asking me questions. They were how old is? Like, I'm 16. And I was like, they knew I was like a nervous little kid that was sat around like all players who sort of looked up to.
That's class, that, though.
But I'd say, like, looking back as a whole, the career that I sort of had, that's probably my highlight.
Yeah.
I don't think anything that I probably could do in football from now would sort of ever top that, and that just how I felt in that moment.
Right, okay, before we go on to moving to Ireland and that, I'm going to do our quiz, goalie or no goalie.
Okay.
My missus actually told me then to say, I've got a text. I was like, it's so cringe. Right, so I've actually changed yours. So it's a goalie or no goalie is how you respond. But I've done five current international goalkeepers that are going to be at the AFCON and five former Love Island contestants from all series. What? So I want you to say goalie or no goalie still.
Right. I see what you're saying.
So I've got 10 names.
Got you.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I've made yours a bit easier.
Okay. Yeah, right. I see what you're saying. Yeah.
But because I've made it a bit more difficult with the AFCON, I've done Love Island themed. Okay. Yeah. Normally I do celebrities from around the world, and it could be anyone.
Okay.
Right. So we'll start off. Number one, Mo Camara.
Goalie.
He is a goalkeeper for Sierra Leone. Yes. Yeah. Well played. One. Let's get the scores up. Do you reckon you'll know all the Love Island ones?
I think that's how I should get all these.
All the other ones, yeah good, right. Number two, Idris Virgo.
No goalie.
is not a goalkeeper. Yeah. Series 4 from Love Island. Number 3, Anthony Mandrea.
Goalie.
Goalkeeper, yes. Algeria goalkeeper. You're going to fly at this, aren't you? I've made this far too easy for you. Right, number 4, Kaz Kamwe.
No goalie.
Why?
Because he's just been announced on the new All-Stars one.
Actually, yeah, nice.
She literally got announced
she was in a Love Island Series 7.
7, yeah.
Right, number 5, Omar Sultani.
I'm going to say goalie for one of the North African nations.
He is not a goalkeeper.
Is he not?
He was in Series 1 of Love Island.
Oh, I know. I'm not going to know any of the Series 1. That's that's where you might get me out.
Nice,
yeah.
Good. Yeah. Right, we'll crack on. Number 6, Ibrahim Kone.
Goalie.
He is a goalkeeper, yeah. He plays for Guinea. Right, number 7, Richard Afari.
Goalie.
He is a goalkeeper as well. He is a Ghana and Orlando goalkeeper. Flying here. Absolute piss this. Right, number 8, Denon Lewis.
No goalie. Recognise that name.
Love Island Series 5. Now actually plays for Woking. I don't know. He's a fullback.
Don't recognise him, but recognise the name more than
Nice.
Casa Amor, yeah. They get me out on some Casa Amor.
Yeah.
Because they come in for 3 days, and if they don't get anyone to take them back to the villa, they go to you.
Oh, right, okay, yeah. Right, number 9, Mori Diaw.
Goalie.
He's a goalkeeper for Senegal. One more. Number 10, Kane Reid.
No goalie. Series 9.
Series 9. Yeah, nice. You. Rightly, yeah. 9 out of 10.
Yeah.
Very good guy.
I'll take that.
Obviously a little Love Island theme then. Right, before we start going on to the Love Island stuff then, you moved over to Ireland for Shelburne.
Yeah.
At 22. You kept a clean sheet in your debut in the Cup.
Yep.
Did you go out there with expectations to play more games than you did?
No, obviously I'd been in the non-league system and I've got a friend called Daniel Hawkins who was over there. He's now at Haverford West in the Welsh League. But yeah, he was over there and there was a lad called Lewis Webb who was on loan from Swansea at the time, goalkeeper now, and he'd just gone back. So Dan, my mate, had a word with the captain who then had a word with the manager. And said, listen, I've got this keeper here. One of my mates is a keeper. Would you want to have a look at him?
Yeah.
So suddenly I get a text from Damien Duff then.
That's incredible.
And then the goalkeeper coach as well. And the next week I'm over in Dublin, sleeping on a single bed on the floor in my mate's room.
In your mate's room.
Yeah. I was like, that's what I've got to do. I was like, I'm not going to get a hotel.
Yeah.
I'm like, yeah, I'm a non-league player now. I had to humble myself and be like... Yeah. I'm not worthy of a hotel.
Yeah.
I was staying on the floor of my mate's room and
how did the trial obviously went well then?
Well, yeah. So 2 days later, anyway, I get a call and Gaffer was just like, "I've seen enough. Like, we want you to sign over here." And he had the intention of then giving me a chance at number one, but I'd not played in. This was so the Irish season goes through from February to November. So this was about July time. Or is it June? Yeah, about July. So I'd not played in about 3 months then. So he put me in a 19s game and I was playing really well as well. And really warm day. And someone's struck one at me and I've like parried it out and they scored the rebound. I was like, oh, that was the one thing I did wrong in the game. I was like, if that didn't happen, I was like, I might have had a shot at number one here.
Yeah.
But from that moment, I sort of settled as a number two. I was like, I'm living in Dublin. It was a city which I enjoyed living in. I'm playing full-time football. I'm getting paid as a
Who
full-time
doesn't love
footballer.
To go to Temple Bar, by the way?
Yeah. Well, then again, it's very touristy now, Temple Bar. Yeah. I like the Irish accent on the girls, so that was half the reason I like living there. So I thought sort of settled as a number two. And yeah, full-time football, full-time paycheck. So
yeah,
I was just sort of settled. And it comes to the end of that season and the new season came around then and the number one then went, he went to Galway and Galway's keeper came to Shelburne and I looked at some of the clips, he'll probably end up listening to this, so like I think I've told him it to his face, but I looked at some of the clips of the season before. I think he'd sort of cost the team at Galway in the playoff, had a poor game, so I was like, right, I've got a shot at it here, I'm going to work as hard as possible. And yeah, I went for it. And I think we played 8 preseason games, 4 each. And we probably on an even keel.
Yeah.
But he would have been on more money. He would have been, he's obviously
been brought in.
He started the season as number one. I was like, yeah, but I might get a chance here. And he went on to win Keeper of the Year. Honestly, I can't say a bad word. He had a brilliant season.
Fair
and
fact.
The best thing is he's a great lad as well.
Yeah.
Like out of all the goalkeepers I've ever been competing with, he's the one I've got on with the best.
Yep.
But yeah, so he's gone on to win Keeper of the Year. Connor Kearns, his name is. Yeah. I'll just give him a little shout out on
it. Yeah, nice, of course.
But I think he'll get over to England at some point. He's one of the biggest kicks I've ever seen in my life.
Yeah.
Yeah, if we're talking 80 yards.
The Irish lads do kick it far. It's a Gaelic though, isn't it?
Yeah, that's what it is, yeah. Yeah. They'll know what they're doing with it, so.
So then, obviously, you're saying that obviously he played that season and had an unbelievable year. Are you thinking, right, I'm staying here to compete until you got a weirdest phone call ever?
Yeah, so when obviously he won Keeper of the Year, I wasn't there for 5 months of it. I'd already had this phone call. So I was for about 3 months. Number two, I'd played cup games and I don't think I actually conceded a goal in any of the cup games I played either, because there's a thing that's not actually put down on the stats is a thing called the Leinster Senior Cup. And I played two of them games, did all right. And I was like, if there is ever a problem, I was like, I can come in and I'll back myself to go and do a good job here. But yeah, then a phone call came from ITV.
Talk us through how this all came about then.
So for Series 8, so a girl I'd used to see was on Series 8. I'd seen her like 2 years before it. And I was like, oh, I'm going to apply for a laugh here. Like nothing serious, but I didn't do the full application. And just put my name down, put my number down, and then never heard anything from that. But a year later, I get a phone call and I don't answer it because I didn't know the number. Any number I don't know, it's not saved. I don't answer it.
I'm the same. I won't answer it.
But then I got a text. It was like, so-and-so from ITV. We just want to have a chat about your Love Island application. I'm like, I haven't applied for Love Island yet. Anyway, give them a ring back. And they're like, yeah, we like what we've seen. Because when you do the first part of the application, you have to put a few photos down. You have to tag your Instagram. So they'd seen my Instagram. And they were like, yeah, we like the look of you. We want to do a Zoom call. So I end up doing a Zoom call. And then you're like, yeah, at that point, you know how many people that you hear, oh, I could have got on Love Island.
Yeah,
I could
have
done this. I had the phone call for Love Island. So at that point, I'm just like, oh, it's funny. It's a story to tell the lads about in the changing room. Like,
Was you telling the lads or was you keeping it a secret?
If nothing come about, I would
you
have.
Would have done,
there
yep.
was a couple of lads who I did tell who were on board.
Yeah.
I've got my best mate who I took to training every morning, like called Shane Farrell, and one of the lads who I live with called Mark Coyle as well. So they were sort of in the loop.
They must have been cracking up laughing at you.
Oh, they couldn't believe it. They thought I was taking a piss.
Yeah, I can imagine
So yeah, I kept them two in the loop. And obviously I'd had the call. And you don't think anything's going to happen of it. And a couple of days later, I get a call and say, listen, we want to fly you over. The execs want to meet you. We want an interview in London. So I come to the lads. I was like, you're not going to believe this. I want me to fly to London. And they were like, well, you can't. You've got training. I was like, well, I can because I can do it on a Wednesday.
Yeah.
It's like we trained Monday, Tuesday, off Wednesday, in Thursday, game Friday.
Yep.
Like, yeah, I can do it on a Wednesday. I can fly over on the Tuesday night. And they were just pissing themselves about it. They were having a great laugh. But yeah, so they rang me up. Like, when can you... Love Island now rang me up and said, when can you do it? I was like, oh, I can only really do a Wednesday. I was like, I've got to keep this under wraps. I can't miss training for illness or anything.
Yeah.
So like, yeah, we can do a Wednesday. So I flew over on the Tuesday night, stayed, did the interview. Didn't hear anything for a week or so. I gave them a text. I was like, is anything going on? And they were like, yeah, we'll let you know. They were like, we'll let you know. It was one of them almost like... we'll let you know text as in, you know, people do as
it's quite loose, isn't it?
Actually going to let you know. And then suddenly again, the next day or something, they were like, yeah, you need to fly for your medical. I was like, this could happen now. Did the medical.
You're arranging all these flights back and forward.
No, so Love Island are paying for it.
Yeah, I know.
So, but I'm doing
in between
the
training
sessions. In between sessions, yeah.
Wow.
Every Wednesday. So no coaches had any idea until this. And then, I did the medical, and then you basically go into... After you do the medical, there's still a massive selection process for it of loads and loads of people, probably maybe 300 or something,
yeah.
I think. And then they have to, like, PowerPoint present each profile of each person to the execs, and then they sort of pick...
Whittle it down.
Yeah, they whittle it down based on sort of...
Looks,
who you like, what your type is, what your personality is, who would fit with who, where could we fit you into the storyline. Then they do that, and suddenly I got a phone call to say, listen, we want to fly you out. So at that point then I'm like, right, I've got to tell the captain, I've got to tell the goalkeeper coach.
That must be one of the most nerve-wracking things.
Horrible.
Pulling a gaffer. It wasn't, normally it's like, can I get in the team? I want games. But to pull the gaffer and say, I'm going on Love Island.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah. Like, it was a wild thing. Like, I told the captain first, and I went, I just keep it under wraps for now. Once I got the first phone call to say, listen, we want to fly you out. And then I think it was when I got the date of when I was flying out, that's when I went to the goalkeeper coach at first.
Yeah.
I just pulled him after training, and I was like, I knew it was my last session. And I was like, I've got to tell you something. Like, I'm going to be flying to... Oh, no, it wasn't my last session. It was... I had a week after that, sorry. I did go on the bench for another game. I pulled him into the cabin, and I was just hoping the manager didn't walk in, because they're all in, like, the same sort of porter cabin.
Yeah.
And I was just hoping the manager didn't walk in. I was like, I'm going to tell you the maddest thing now. You probably will never experience this throughout being a goalkeeper coach again. And he said to me, he was like, you're not going on Love Island, are you? And I was like, you're not going to believe it, I am.
Yeah.
And I think he was happy for me in a way, but obviously I was the number two at the time, so he understood why I was doing it.
Yeah.
He obviously then, I said to him, I was like, should I go and tell the gaffer myself or would you relay it to him? And he was like, I think it's best I relay it to him for now. So he relayed it to him, and I didn't hear from the manager. We had the game and then we had training on the Monday, I think, and the manager just walked past me, didn't talk to me at all. Like, pretend like it was like it didn't exist. And then come round to it, I think we'd lost on the Friday, and then we come round to it and he was in a little bit of better mood by the Tuesday. So then I went and spoke to him, and he was like, he was actually all right about
it.
Yeah, he actually wasn't too bad. And he was like, you know what, I'm never watched anything other than football in my life, but you're giving me something else to do. So yeah, it all came good anyway.
Yeah.
And yeah, I ended up having the last game, getting the ferry back over with all my stuff from where I was living, home.
You'd have to pack up as if you'd just not coming
back. All within 3 days.
So they terminated your contract?
No, see, this is actually where the story gets... the other side of Love Island, this is where the story gets a little bit funny. So they hadn't terminated it, but obviously I wasn't getting paid. Technically it would have been, I was just getting punished and punished and punished, like docked my full wages every week because I wasn't turning up to training,
okay,
even though I was obviously on TV. so then there was, just towards the end of the season then, the keeper got a calf injury, the first choice, and the keeper they brought over, this is after the Love Island, by the way. The keeper got a calf injury. The second keeper come in, didn't have a great game. And then I'd gone over to commentate on that game.
No way.
On the League of Ireland TV. And I was speaking to the manager after. He's like, are you fit? Like, how are you thinking? How are you keeping? I was like, I'm not going to lie, Gaffer. I've not trained in a while. And he was like, there's a possibility. Like, you could play last game of the season. No, this is where it all becomes intense. Last game of the season, Shelburne need to win to qualify for Europe.
No way.
And it turned out anyway that basically if they'd have played me, there was some weird thing with the contract where if they'd have won, qualified for Europe, Bohemians then could have appealed to the league. And so they didn't risk it. And I think they just give the keeper painkillers and injections. And
that would have been mad.
Yeah, and you could see he couldn't kick during it. But anyway, this is the lad with probably the best kick in the league, and he couldn't kick during it. But I went in the away end. It was Drogheda away. I went in the away end. And they won and qualified for Europe in the end. So
amazing.
It's been a pretty wild year for Shelburne.
Yeah, right. As I was saying to you off air, I've never watched Love Island.
Go on.
Until like last night, I was like, I've got to do my research. I started watching it. And like, for me that's never seen it, there's so much. The first thing that surprised me is you've all got decent gear on. I say, if you've all come from like normal backgrounds, how have you all got decent gear? Or do they provide it all?
Provide a little bit, but most of it's yourself, yeah?
Yeah. I was like, why the hell is it all of you got the best teeth in the world?
I got mine done before.
Yeah, that's what I mean. So like, that's what I wanted to know. Did you get your teeth done in?
I got composite bonding done on my teeth, yeah.
Yep. Did everyone? Because everyone's got weldy teeth, haven't they?
No, I actually don't know. We don't really talk about it with each other.
I was watching
it. Some of them could have gotten done,
well,
yeah.
I suppose if you know that you're going to get that level of exposure, you need to look at your best. So you probably started...
I was gymming every single day.
Gymming every single day.
Yeah, I got my teeth
tanning.
Done. tanning. I don't really tan that well, so yeah. I was probably the whitest one on there. But yeah, you try and go through a whole process because you're like, this is happening. I'm going to be in the eyes of the country here.
Yeah. Do you get a list of requirements from them? You know, like obviously like the clothing stuff, it has to be like unbranded stuff.
So it has to be unbranded, yeah.
Yeah.
The only way it can be branded is if eBay bring it in.
Right,
that's
okay.
The only way it can be branded. But any of your own stuff, yeah, it can't be branded at all. Like, you could have this,
yes,
like, writing on it, but you just can't have the brand.
Yeah, okay, right.
So that's why most of it was unbranded. And yeah, anything branded you did see would have been from eBay, who sponsored the program.
So. Right, okay. What? So would you get, like, a shopping list that you can actually pick from? Or is it just your own gear?
No, just your own gear, and you just have to be... You get, like, the requirements, it has to be unbranded.
There's a lot of pressure on that, then.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah.
Because, obviously, it's a popularity contest.
Yeah.
So you've got to make sure that you're looking at your best at all times,
yeah,
in the new gear every day, because you can't really be seen wearing it twice because you're on TV.
You can about 2 or 3 weeks later, you get away with it. But if you do anything which you know is going to be an iconic moment in a certain outfit, you can't then wear it again.
You just have to like bin that gear and go, right, that's
no,
that done.
You just have to mix it up the next time you wear it.
Yeah.
You couldn't wear it fully again. Whilst if it's a day where you don't really do anything and you sort of know, you're like, have I had a moment tonight? You sort of know. If there's nothing that's really gone on, you can like, I can wear that again in 2 weeks' time, as long as you're not dumped.
Yeah. Did you love the experience?
I did, yeah. No, I did. It was, 6 weeks without your phone. Like, I come out after it and I was like, people were telling me what's gone on in the real world because they didn't tell us anything. Well, I didn't know about the submarine.
Complete media blackout.
The submarine going down to the Titanic. I had no idea about that for 4 weeks. And that was meant to have been like...
Massive news.
Massive news at the time, and we had no idea. Liverpool signed Szoboszlai.
Yeah.
Looked at how Wrexham game had gone.
Yeah.
You were playing in the States.
Yeah, oh, right.
Over
pre-season,
Chelsea
yeah,
United in the States. Yeah. Wales had had qualifiers. So you're asking all this. You're like, this is like something from a movie where you're coming out
up.
And you're like, people are telling you the world news. It's like one of the movies where you just isolate yourself from the world and you're coming back up and everyone's telling you what's going on. And
3 weeks then without your phone. What's that really like?
3 weeks I didn't mind, but I did six.
Oh, you did six,
I
right,
did
okay.
six, yeah. So 3 weeks I didn't mind, but the last three they dragged, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was long.
So do you have any, like, manage to speak to your family at all?
No.
No, so no, yeah, it's just a blackout, yeah.
They have a friends and family day where they come in but that was 5 weeks in.
Oh, okay.
So my mum and sister came in the villa.
Nice.
And obviously after no contact with anyone from my own, from reality.
Yep.
It's called reality TV, but it's not your reality.
Yeah,
Yeah, so no contact. So I cried when they came in. I was like...
Just to see a familiar
just to
face.
See familiar
faces.
Like it was one of the most emotional moments I've had. Like,
yeah.
Yeah, like it is... It's mentally draining. It's mentally like...
You're fully immersed in it.
Fully immersed in it. Like it's just a crazy experience.
You must create some bond though, living with people and it's that intense. You know, like
you have
for housemates and...
No, you do, yeah.
Like, I know you said that you're going to meet someone later on and like, it must be amazing because you'll make proper friends because you never get an opportunity to live with people for that long in the real world.
I think it's also like, there's little things behind the scenes where there's certain involvements from like people behind the scenes and like, you can't talk about them to the public, but we know like what's happened. We're the only ones who lived that experience.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, no, I can't even talk to your family because they don't understand when we're saying, like, oh, we went to beach or we had a little chat outside the front door. Like, we're the only ones who know what that means and the context behind it and different stuff. And, yeah, we just lived the most amazing experience for 6 weeks. And, yeah, I don't think I won't ever forget it. Yeah. Like,
How much of that is scripted, though? Or do they just put you in scenarios and then say, right, you now talk?
Yeah, like, obviously... with reality TV, like it's got to make good TV. Like sometimes you sort of push to go and have a conversation earlier than you'd want to, or sometimes you'll be stopped from having a conversation because they've got another conversation going on. They need all the cameras on that, and you'll just get told to
pause that
a little bit. And yeah, like they have to make good TV. So yeah,
we have that a little bit with the Wrexham documentary where like you have natural conversations with people. And they will then walk in halfway through a conversation and ask you to restart it.
Yeah.
So like, and that happens all the time. So I remember when we signed Owen O'Connell, and like I was chatting to him about golf and stuff and about living in London, and then they walked in halfway through. It's like, right, can you restart all that? And he was like,
yeah.
It's awkward at first, and then all of a sudden you're like, right, I better start doing. And then you like go through the motions, and it It almost felt like you're being fake, even though you, because you knew all the answers to the questions.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. You've got to try and like put on a.
But I can imagine it's quite similar in that sense of like they tell you, right, you two need to go for a chat, and you're like, we don't really need to have a chat. We just had it. Like,
yeah. Oh, as in like redoing the chat. Yeah. Sometimes that, or what they'll do is they'll like, you'll chat for a bit, and then you'll like, they'll say, just talk about this. Like, this is something we need to cover. Because obviously they'll have shown something from the previous day.
Yep.
And then we haven't spoke about that the next day. And it just makes sense to us, but it makes no sense on TV.
Yeah.
So like, just cover this little thing to, so it makes sense to the people. But yeah, like you would never, they'd never really push you to have a chat with anyone you completely didn't want to have a chat with.
Yeah,
they don't force you to do anything. It's not, you don't read from a script or they tell you what to do or anything. Yeah. It's just reality TV people making reality TV. And it does take its toll on you, like mentally having to deal with all that, but it's completely understandable why they do it. And many people have come out from the show and sort of complained about how they were treated or that it's had a massive impact on their mental health. And I can sort of see why that would come across. But at the same time, you knew what you were getting yourself in for. Like, this is
that's what one
TV
of the
show that the country watches. So,
but that's one of the things I wanted to ask you. Is that more because your circumstance change? You know, like your popularity, your fame, the attention changes. So then it's like, because you've come out a total different person in the public's perspective, that must be difficult to deal with.
I found coming out to it with all the attention not too bad. I had a thing with a girl on there and the public wanted us back together after we come out. And like that wasn't too bad. Like that sort of brought us closer. And that was quite crazy to deal with because like people were like sort of screenshotting my stories. Like when I was actually on the flight to go and do the American one, I was in LA and then the girl who everyone wanted me back with put a photo up in an airport and they were like, oh, they're going to see each other in LA. Yeah. There was actually a thing where me and that girl were put on a billboard in Times Square.
No way.
It's the craziest story, yeah. And I didn't think it was real, but it turns out it was real. Someone had paid for a billboard of like highlights of me and this girl in Times Square. So everyone thought we were going to America and we were going to go and see this billboard for ourselves. But I was then on the way to go and bombshell the American version of the show.
When you left the UK one then, and you've left the villa, and then do you fly home?
I fly home.
How long were you at home for before you got the call from America?
I got the call pretty quickly, about 3 days. But I'd gone to the reunion, and there's like a reunion a week later, and I wasn't sure I wanted to do it at that point, to be honest. I'd made like people around me aware, I'd made the girl I was with aware at that point that it could happen. But then they got a call another 2 days after the reunion, and they're like, right, we need this to happen, you need to fly out now. This is the figure that we're offering you. And people like think that, like in the UK one, you get £375 a week.
Yep.
And the American one, the Americans do get a weekly wage, but for me it was different. Like I got a one-off figure.
Like a lump sum,
That was like, I couldn't turn it down at the time.
Because the salary in football anyway, at any level, it ain't great unless you're in the Premier League. So to be a number two in Ireland and like being around the Welsh leagues, this is an opportunity you can't turn down.
Like financially, I'm better than I've been in my entire life.
Yeah,
now.
Exactly.
But like with the American one, they put the figure in front of me and they said, listen, we're booking your flight now. That flight ended up getting cancelled. I was like, oh, this is not going to happen. Then they booked a flight again for me the next day. I flew to LA, flew to Fiji. Flew to LA, was in LA for 10 hours, had to get a COVID vaccine. They said, you flew me to LA. They're like, right, you have to have this COVID vaccine.
Yep.
I was like, if I don't have the COVID vaccine, they'll fly me home. Literally, that's how brutal it was. So then I'd lay over in LA for 10 hours and then I flew to Fiji. So I was about 30 hours on a plane and suddenly I'm walking to a villa the other side of the world.
Yeah. That must have been the most surreal thing then.
Because obviously, it's crazy,
like in that short spell for the UK one, it's kind of felt rushed a little bit, like how you got in there. But then to leave one villa and then jump straight into another one, that's mental. Has anyone done that before?
Not straight away, no. There are people who have been on the show multiple times.
Yeah.
But it was definitely a first doing not only two, but three in the same year.
Three in a year, yeah.
Three in a year, yeah. That's definitely never been done before. I know that. But I've just had the wildest summer. Yeah. Like,
was the American one better than the English one? Or the UK one?
The UK one's the one that, when people ask me about Love Island, I talk about the UK one. Yeah. That is Love Island to me. That's where Love Island started. That's where I was like open to everything. And the US one, obviously this figure was involved. So I was like, right, I've got to go in there. I've got to go and make a sort of impact. So yeah. I went in there with quite a bit of a personality.
Yeah, you could go and just express yourself because it don't matter if you leave within a week.
Yeah, I was. I ended up leaving after about 6 days, just before the final.
Yeah. Well, you're not trying to overly impress either. You're not going, I've got to stay and I've got to play the game almost.
Yeah.
Do you? Because in the English one, if you're getting paid weekly, longevity is better for you.
Yeah, I think in the UK one, you're just embracing the experience. Like, you know how big it is. You know how big the show is. And, like, you know a lot of people are watching you. That's the sort of
the
original version. So you're, like, just embracing it for what it is. You're like, I am on Love Island now. Like, I've watched the show for many years before it.
Yeah.
And it's crazy because I almost, like, looked at previous seasons and I had a feeling that I was going to go on one day. I just had a feeling in my head.
Yeah.
So I, like, took the little things that people did and that worked. Do you know what I mean? So it was a crazy experience just being in there. And I had to embrace it. But, yeah, the American one was different. I'd never watched American Love Island, so I didn't know what it was like. But, it seemed a little bit more chill and, there wasn't... You just sort of do what you want, really.
Yeah. So then 6 days in there... You then come back home before you then go again?
No, I stay in Fiji.
Oh, right, okay.
Stay in Fiji the whole time. That was probably the most mentally draining and tough time of my entire life, probably, because I had 5 weeks in a hotel room. Bearing in mind, in the UK one, before you go into the villa, you're in, like, a holding villa with a chaperone. Yeah. So you have someone to talk to. Before I went in between the US one and the thing called Love Island Games, I was in 5 weeks in a hotel room. There's no chaperone. You've got the hotel room to yourself. You've got a balcony, but mine didn't overlook the beach. Mine overlooked, like, a path that walked across, so it wasn't great. And you've got your phone, but you were 11 hours ahead. So as you're waking up, people are going to sleep. As you're going to bed, people are waking up.
Yep.
So there was probably about 2 or 3 hours where I got a little bit of time to talk to people. So you're spending most of your day there on your phone. You're allowed one walk out, or you're allowed out your hotel room once for, like, half an hour, or...
Is that just to keep you
Sure, just to make sure we're not literally losing your head. Because imagine you never left the hotel room for 5 weeks.
It's like isolation and COVID, that.
Oh, honestly, it was absolutely brutal. And I was like, I wanted to leave. I wanted to leave 3 times, but I knew. I was like, I've come this far. I was like, I had to do that one to earn the money as well, so...
It sounds so glamorous, being able to stay in Fiji for 5 weeks.
Oh, I know,
in reality, it's just not.
Oh, it's such a first world problem that I'm complaining about. Yeah. But it was tough doing that, yeah.
Yeah. What did you manage to get, like, a PlayStation, Xbox in?
No, I never brought it over. I didn't think that would happen. Like, I got told when it first happened, they were like, right, we can fly, because Fiji's only 3 hours from Australia. Like, well, you can go to Australia for 2 weeks in between. And then I come out the American one. I think I'd got a little bit further than they expected. I think they expected me to literally be in there 2 or 3 days, but I ended up in there for 6. And they were like, yeah, you've literally got, like, 1-2 days walk, like, freedom of, like, walking out your hotel room. Yeah. So they took my room key off me. I didn't have a room key. So if I walked out, I couldn't get back in.
Yeah.
And there's security, like, patrolling all our rooms. And,
no way. So all the other contestants of that were in the same hotel, in the same boat?
In the same hotel, in the same boat. So they had a whole system of people walking at certain times. Yeah, that's why we couldn't just go out whenever we wanted.
Yeah. I suppose, you can't make relations and...
Yeah, you can't. But also there was a COVID thing as well. There was a COVID bubble. If you had COVID, you couldn't go in the villa.
Yeah.
But so it was quite brutal. But also they never did the US one like I did. So they flew out 2 weeks later. So they only had 3 weeks in holding, some of them. Yeah. And some of them went in straight away. So they were only in holding for a week. And it was a tough period, yeah.
Crazy time.
Yeah.
See, since then, obviously, have you put your football to a back burner, or are you still interested in getting back involved in football?
I'm definitely still interested in getting back. I have done some training recently and I'm like, my hands are still there. I need to get my kicking back going again. Yeah. I need a full pre-season, I think.
Yeah. What do you think you want to do next? Do you want to go into the media stuff, or do you want to go back into football?
I want to try and mix and match. Yeah, I want to try and do both, because football's such, like, an enjoyable... There's nothing like being in a changing room environment and winning a game. Like, nothing can replicate that. So I do want to get back to it for next season now, but I'll need a full pre-season at it, because 7 months out the game, like, it takes a toll on you. Yeah, like, I'd not... Up until last week or so, I'd not trained in 7 months, like... I was catching a ball again. I was like, oh my God, like, this is, I've not done this since Shelburne. It's definitely set me back. But if I have a good full pre-season at it, smash the gym, I think
yeah,
and get back to it. And yeah, I do definitely want to get back to it at some point because I'm 23. Well, literally turned 23 yesterday, so
yeah.
I'm young for a goalkeeper. Like, I got years and years, so I'm like, there could possibly still be some sort of career. Even if I could make it to the conference or...
Yep.
You never know, absolutely smash it.
On the flip side, your head must be a little bit turned with the media stuff and TV stuff because obviously now with your fame and that you've got, like, there must be more opportunities to go on Come Dine With Me and Big Brother and, you know, like, Dark Things As It Is, or Celebs Go Dating. Like, these things must be now open to you, which were never before.
Yeah, I'm sure they probably will be this year. There are a lot of TV shows that would be. And, like, I've had thoughts about moving out to America as well, moving out to LA.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's just like, did I do all this? Did I make all them mistakes off the pitch? Did I have my success and failure? Do all that growing up to just retire? Like that, because if I don't go back to it, I'm retired now.
Yeah.
Like, I've retired at 22.
Yep.
So that's the debate I've got in my head. I do miss the game.
It just depends on how you now use the situation that you're in to your best advantage, doesn't it?
Because if I did go for it, I would go for it. Like,
yep.
I'm now in a space like with my head where I'm prepared to work as hard as possible to, and not be a little prick.
Yeah, yeah. There's a lot more opportunities now and a lot more understanding in football as well with the social media stuff and, like, obviously everyone's fame and that has grown more anyway in YouTube and obviously, like, if you could tie all of those things together and carry on and go back into a team, I'm sure that there'll be loads of teams out there that would love to use your fame almost.
Yeah.
And, like, tie it all in, maybe getting you to run their own socials and, like, or a YouTube channel for them and making a big series out of it.
Yeah, well, possibly, yeah. Like, I've not had anyone come to me with that.
Yeah.
I'm starting to go into my own sort of football stuff now, which, I say I'm looking at. This is obviously my first football podcast, but I do want to talk about football. Like, I watch every game of football. Like, if I'm sat at home, I will put anything on.
Yeah.
Like, I think the African Cup of Nations starts this week. I'll probably watch every game from that. And then I'll go and watch Luton v Burnley next or something. I do like talking about football.
Still
and now I have a platform where I can talk about it on camera
and
put some funny opinions across and also put some truthful opinions across. I wouldn't want to turn that down either.
No, of course. The only other thing I wanted to speak to you about then, obviously I spoke to you about it off air, but the rise in your social media fame and TikTok and stuff like that, do you feel like there's certain demands on you now to keep up with consistency and your appearances and stuff like that?
Yeah, definitely, because obviously the people follow you because they want to see what you're doing.
Yep.
I probably haven't been as good on Instagram in terms of posting photos as I should have been recently, but I'm going to get better coming into this month now. But yeah, there's definitely... Well, I have clothing contracts where I have to post like 4 posts, 4 reels, 3 TikToks a month. So it has to be done in a certain time frame. Yeah.
Is your media agent constantly like nudging you? Yeah, going, you need to do this. You need to do that.
She nudged me yesterday, actually. Yeah. So I did go and get content yesterday. So I was around Manchester yesterday, just getting photos in different gear. Of the clothing brand I'm working with. So
do you find that hard? Because obviously you're not come from that. It's not you. Like,
not
in
me.
A football environment, you'd get like the Mickey taken out of you.
You'd get nailed, wouldn't you?
Like the banter would be flying, and all the pictures would be in every group chat that you're in.
Yeah,
but now it's your world, and you have to do it. Like, I've done adverts for this show, and like you get more used to it the more you do it. But at first, you're like, I'm so far out of my comfort zone.
Yeah,
because even going on Love Island, you're still yourself. But when someone is going, do this photo shoot and do this pose, it's so different.
Oh, it's like it's not me as a person doing this side of it. Going on Love Island and being a bit vain on TV, everyone who's ever met me would have said, yeah, it's probably a bit of Scott.
But
the actual, when it comes down to the photos and the reels and stuff like that and doing the TikToks, like, it's not me. I just have a laugh on TikTok. I don't try and do any cringy stuff where I'm, like, playing with my hair or... Then again, actually, I did do one the other day kind of clothing, so that's what I mean. I'm having to get used to it.
Yeah, yeah. But again, it's adapting to the role that you now have.
Yeah. No, again, it's a very, very different role, but...
Yeah.
Coming back to the people giving you stick, I think I'd want to go back to football. I actually think I'd love some home fans, or if you're playing away, some home fans giving you a bit of shit behind the goal, to be honest.
Yeah, I'm sure it'd be good fun as well.
Yeah,
you'd have a good bit of banter.
I think I'd have a good bit of banter with that. And like for me, like I don't find going on the show embarrassing. Obviously, people are going to try and take the piss, and coming back into that world now, people are going to start making jokes.
But that's what I mean. I think people are more understanding of it now.
Yeah.
And it's a lot more... Everyone's eyes are more open to this is the world that we live in, and social media is a huge plus now. Yeah. It's not a negative, and people want to know more about celebrities and football culture and stuff. So being able to provide that, even like this podcast is another platform for that. Yeah. So like, I think people are so much more open to it, where 10 years ago you'd have got absolutely crucified for, oh, you're too distracted and your attention's not there and you don't love it or you're not in it. For like, but like football has changed, which is now hopefully should benefit.
Yeah, well, definitely. I think it definitely benefited Shelburne when I'd left there, because I think a little bit of their decision to let me go, they were brilliant with me when I went on the show, by the way. I've been back to the club and go and see all of them. But it was probably like, it can get a little bit of exposure. Like, I put a TikTok up the other day. It's about 750,000 views on their TikTok page.
Yeah.
And I think I spoke about it on the show as well. I was on, did you see the first date when I came in?
Yes.
And I went, I played for Shelburne in the League of Ireland, and she went, and the girl went Sherburn.
Yeah.
Even that went like sort of viral. So that's, again, it's helping the club that I'm with. It's definitely a big part of today's society and today's game. Everything's on your phone these days.
Exactly,
That's just the proof in the pudding of how it works.
Nah, class. I hope you do get back in, mate. Like, I still, like, even talking to you, you've still got loads more to give.
Yeah.
You can tell you've got passion still to go out and play football and be a goalie.
Definitely. Yeah.
Right, before we finish, I always finish on this question, but what does the goalkeepers' union mean to you?
I think the goalkeeper position's like a sport within a sport.
Love that.
And again, referring back to what I was saying about in the Villa, the only people that understand that situation are the people that were in it with me. Being a goalkeeper is the exact same thing. The only people who understand about being a goalkeeper are goalkeepers.
Yep.
So yeah, it's just that constant sort of people to lean on, who when you make an excuse or make a mistake and you tell the reasons why, and the gaffer's saying that's just an excuse, load of shit, all this, other goalkeepers then understand it. And it's just that, it's that pillar, that solid sort of foundation that you can always fall back on when things aren't going well.
Yeah, no, class. Brilliant answer that, mate. We're our own community. We know, love and understand all of each other. But
I think the name of the podcast is brilliant. The amount of times I've shouted all them three words.
All
as well,
three words, every corner. That's where it came from. Right, Scotty, thank you very much for coming in, mate. It's been an absolute joy, mate. I've actually, like, I'm going to go back and finish off your series.
Go and have a look, yeah.
Yeah, you got me hooked. Good watch. My missus won't be happy, but yeah, you got me hooked, mate. This has been the Yours Mine Away podcast with me, Mark Howard. Scotty, class guest, mate. Thank you very much, mate.
What a save from Mark Howard.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode, and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
I'm Ina Garten. Welcome to Be My Guest, the podcast. One of the best gifts you can give friends is spending time together. But what's even better than that? Cooking with them. On Be My Guest, the podcast, new friends and old stop by my barn for some conversation and great cooking. We talk about food, life, and everything in between. Listen to Be My Guest, the podcast with me, Ina Garten, and join us wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.